You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Game Play. I am your host, Matthew Cause. Yes, we will get in to the Raptors 104-101 overtime loss to the 76ers in a little bit. Some news. Devin Booker has suffered a grade one right hamstring strain. And sources telling Brian Windhorst he could miss 2 to 3 weeks. And Booker is a guy who's dealt with hamstring issues in the past 2 years. Suns are 8-6 in games without Booker this season. I think they still go on to beat the New Orleans Pelicans. I thought that series was going to be a sweep. Maybe now I go 6. We've been huge fans of the Phoenix Suns on this show. Their odds to win the championship was at plus 320. Now it's at plus 480. I would say hop on the Suns train. I think they are able to weather this storm. They have other stars. They have depth. They have very good coaching staff. So it stinks, but I think they'll be able to survive. Also, it looks like Chris Middleton, who also got injured in another surprising game, the Bulls by DeMar DeRozan, beat Milwaukee. And in that, though, Chris Middleton injured his leg, and he is now out 3 to 4 weeks. That is a more significant injury, and maybe now's the time to start looking at betting. If you were thinking about it on either Boston, Miami, Philly, if you had any thoughts on Milwaukee, I would say pause them. I'm going to throw a question to my producer, Conrad. Conrad, what stranger story? Alexander Ovechkin waving off a penalty that was about to be called on Vegas in the game last night, or a dude decided it was a good idea to annoy Mike Tyson on a plane, and Tyson started punching him on the plane.
Weirder story, I would have to go with the Ovechkin penalty. Not surprised that Mike Tyson punched somebody. That's kind of what he did for a living for a long time.
But wait. And the Ovechkin one, you can easily make the case for it. It's not about, to me, the strange part of the story isn't Tyson punching someone. It's someone deciding, I'm going to annoy Mike Tyson.
Yeah, not the smartest move. I asked you just off air just before the show started, but would you take a punch from Mike Tyson just to say that you took one?
Probably not. It depends where he hits me. You know, like if he's going to hit me in the head, I mean, there's concussion, there is brain trauma, but if it's the fleshy, no, actually, why would I care? Because if I tell someone, hey, Tyson punched me, you know what everyone's going to ask? What did you do? What did you do that Tyson decided to punch you? So no punch from Iron Mike.
Dang, that would have been made for a good story, though, Matt. That one could have been told at bars for forever, as long as COVID doesn't come back and can't go into bars.
Yeah. By the way, I was at the Raptors game last night. It was just cool. Like, the crowd booing Embiid on every possession, the crowd singing the national anthem. It was a really cool experience until overtime. Actually, we have the sound of it. Okay, let's play it really quickly. The Alexander, and then we'll get to my opening thought. And yes, am I delaying my opening thought because it's kind of a downer? Yeah, I am. Sue me. Here's Ovechkin last night declining the penalty.
Ovechkin pulled down. Penalty. Sure, if we might have both?
No, I don't think there's a penalty.
Nothing?
Even Ovechkin agrees there's no penalty.
Okay.
They're both shaking their head. Everyone's shaking their head.
There's no penalty on the play.
There's no penalty.
It was just a little push. It wasn't much. Yeah, I know. You can see Ovechkin, he's basically saying no penalty.
I wonder how his teammates are feeling, or the coaching staff is feeling about that. There'd be a big part of me that's going, hey, Ovi, let's get on the power play. Let's keep scoring. Anyway, all right, let's get to it. Let's get to my opening thought.
Time now for Matt's opening thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
And here we go.
I mean, it's really nothing more than a self-absorbed monologue, a chance for Matt to rant about something and pretend he's a serious radio personality instead of a gas bag. Let's face it, he stole this idea from Dennis Miller.
Now, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
There are a lot of things that stink when you get dumped. You feel like life's carpet has been pulled from under you. It can be embarrassing, humiliating. You don't want to tell your friends or family. How many times do your friends and family side with her or him versus with you? But I think the toughest part is you will question the entire relationship. Suddenly all those years are now on trial in your mind. All the good feelings feel faded, feel tainted. Were we actually happy? You know, and you'll litigate it over and over and over again. I'm having those feelings now about the Raptors, and it makes sense, and it's also totally unfair. My big question: how do you balance all the regular season greatness with this postseason? How do you assess 82 games of good to often great basketball to 3 games of lousy playoff basketball? The nagging concern that we always had about this team: are they truly a good team that could do damage to the playoffs, or were they just that classic regular season try-hard team that'll get outclassed once the playoffs start? After 3 games, I think we know the answer. Nothing clarifies who you are as a player, where you stand in the pecking order of other players, quite like the postseason. You think your favorite player is really a star? All right, let's see what they do in the playoffs. Last night's 104-101 overtime loss to Philly was tough on so many levels. But the main one is we are left wondering just how good is Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet? They combined for 24 points, combined, on 9 of 29 shooting. The worst part was Siakam taking 0 free throws, and he only had 5 shots in the second half in overtime. You see, the greatest sports sin that a star can make, it's not about missing a shot. Everyone misses shots. But it's about shying away from the moment and not even attempting a shot. Siakam's an excellent player. He was the number one reason this team exceeded all expectations. They won 48 games. They got the 5 seed. Toronto had one of the best records against the top 4 teams in each conference. And Pascal, you know, he's an all-star player. But he's not in the rarefied air of the elite players. He's not a top-tier guy. There's nothing wrong with that. There's only about 15 or so of them. But he's not an all-NBA player. The last 11 playoff games, you know, the ones when Kawhi went to California, Siakam under 18 points per game, shooting 40%, shooting 20%, under 20% from three, only averaging 4 free throw attempts per game. And yes, it is a small sample size. I 100% acknowledge that. But the playoffs tell more of a story of who you are as a player than the regular season. As for VanVleet, there, he did an excellent job helping getting other players going, but his size is a detriment in the playoffs, especially in the half court. If he's not hitting his threes at a high rate, Toronto doesn't have much of a chance. He shot 3 of 13, including 2 of 10 from 3. It is fair to say that the Raptors stars did not show up last night, and that's why they lost. And man, that was a tough loss, because they did almost everything right. They never trailed. They outscored Philly on the fast break. They created all the turnovers. They took 12 more shots. James Harden fouled out. And yet Toronto blew their largest lead in the playoffs in franchise history. But I have to go back to my bigger question. How much have the last 3 games clouded what was an excellent regular season? For the majority of the year, Toronto did what a sports team is supposed to do. A sports team is supposed to entertain you. They showed up just about every night. They worked their ass off. They won far more games than they lost. They are incredibly easy to cheer for, to love. That's what makes the last three games hurt. It's fair to say, you know, Siakam, Van Vliet, those guys ran out of gas. They're ranked number one and two in minutes played, taking on a team with more talent. The Siakam basketball story is an incredible, improbable journey that needs to be celebrated. Van Vliet, he's the best leader in the city of Toronto. But moments like this are also a cold slap of reality that this team and those players, they're not the true apex predator alphas that you need to go on a deep playoff run. Siakam isn't. Van Vliet isn't. Again, there's only so many of those in the NBA. It's funny, by the way. We spent the whole year caring so much more about what this team did the regular season compared to the Leafs, where we really didn't care what they did except when they would lose to bottom basement dwellers. And in a snap, in an overtime three-pointer by Embiid, we don't care anymore, as this season is basically done. Now it's about pride, not much more. The hard part in all this will be finding a way to embrace what was a commendable regular season and balance it with some of the difficult truths this postseason has revealed. And that is my opening thought.
I'm finished.
Like, I don't know, how is this for you, Conrad? Because we've all been there. We've all broken up with people. We've all had people that have broken up with us. And by the way, in life, if you've never been dumped, and if you've never dumped anyone, you haven't lived. You got to do it at some point. It stinks on both ends. But when you get dumped, you're like, oh, man, was that really a good relationship? And those thoughts were going on in my head last night walking home from the ACC.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, Matt. And I think you did a great job of kind of, you know, analyzing the two different Toronto teams between the Leafs and the Raptors there. This year with the Raps, it kind of felt as if it was going to be a bit of a rebuilding year at the beginning of the season. It was a new era with no Kyle Lowry anymore. And they're back home after being in Tampa last year. So a lot of things kind of coming together. And you thought it was going to be this rebuilding year at the beginning. And they kind of stunk the joint up at the start of the season. But then throughout it, they kept on improving and improving, and they kind of started to invest into this team emotionally again. And with the Leafs, we know what the story is there. We don't have to go over it again. But with the Raps this year, they kind of pulled you back in if you weren't there at the beginning. And it's just kind of tough last night. You know, the building, the emotions are great in there. The Raps played great first quarter, and the lead kind of dwindled and dwindled and dwindled till the end, and your heart was ripped out. So that was also another good analogy with the breakup. So you nailed the opening thought today, Matt. And a couple of times where the music died down, you put through in a dramatic pause. You nailed it today, man. That was an A-plus for sure.
Thank you, sir. Well, I mean, that's shout out to my parents for paying for my undergrad degree where I majored in theater and history. So, you know, I can just play up to the music. Because we need to be obviously critical, especially of Siakam. Both things can be true. It's a great story. It's a great journey. It's a great year. But regular season, like, we all know this. The difference between the regular season and the postseason is huge. But I feel like it's far bigger in the NBA than it is other sports. And I'm not talking about, like, physicality or intensity, but just in terms of who is really the great players. Like, the Raptors, they were that team that on a Wednesday would just in January would just annoy their opponents so much, and they would squeeze out more wins than they probably deserve based on talent, and they always gave you the complete effort in the regular season. You know, like the Chicago Bulls had one of the worst records against top four seeds. Raptors had one of the best, and part of that is they were the ultimate try hard team. But trying hard, you could go deeper as a try-hard team in hockey where you can negate high-end talent. In basketball, it doesn't work like that. The high-end talent usually, unless you're, you know, Paul George or Karl Anthony Towns, the high-end talent usually comes through. And we're left again with the conclusion that for the Raptors to be a truly great team, they need to have one player, maybe it'll be Scotty Barnes, that is unquestionably better than Pascal Siakam. It can't be where it's like, oh, you know, Barnes is some nights Barnes is better, some nights Siakam's better. It's like, no. It's that guy. It's that guy. And that's what Toronto needs. One other, you know what? I'll save it on the side. There's one other sort of big picture thing. Well, there's a couple. We'll stay with the Raptors game on the other side of the show, because that final play, there's on one level it speaks so much. On one level, it speaks so much about where the NBA is now. And I want to get into that in just a moment. I'm Matthew Kaws. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaws. Dave Poulin will join the show at 2:30. We will discuss Leafs taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. And interesting, no Austin Matthews in the lineup. Sheldon Keefe says he's really close, but we're in a similar place to where we were a couple days ago. It's not making any sense to put him in the lineup at this point, which led on Leafs Lunch a lot of speculation from Al's brother about what's going on. Are they playing coy? It's most likely going to be a first-round matchup between Toronto and Tampa. And I have no idea. I do find it interesting where it's constantly, he's close. Oh, but he's not playing. And, you know, so you just, it still feels like it's no big deal. But it's also one of these things where it's no big deal until it is a big deal. I do like this text, someone writing in to Leafs Lunch. Thanks for the tip, AB. Going hard on Tampa now after Al's brother said take the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think I'm going to take Tampa. And I know the Leafs have been the hotter team. Okay, the Leafs have absolutely been the much hotter team. And we just saw Tampa lose to Detroit. But I'm getting minus 130 on the money line. That's not a lot. Tampa's at home. No Austin Matthews. I will take Tampa. I will say this, though. Tavares to score at plus 230. I like that. Also, FanDuel, they've got a boost. If you think Tavares can get a goal and assist, that's been boosted from plus 291 to plus 340. So you bet 100, you'd win 340. And if you want a simple one, Nylander, minus 156 just to get a point. Guy's been incredible as of late, and I feel pretty good about that bet. So getting back into the Toronto Raptors, let's hear from Coach Nick Nurse. And the Raptors lose 104-101 in overtime on a three-pointer by Embiid. More on that in a second. But here's Nick Nurse talking about Pascal Siakam. Here's the coach on Siakam going cold in the second half.
He was they put Embiid on him, you know, for most of the half, and Embiid was playing him up a little bit more than normal. He didn't get a lot of, I didn't think, a lot of great looks. He had a few, but I didn't think he'd get a lot of great looks. But again, you got to adjust to what the coverages are, and I thought both he and Freddie did that, you know. And that's, you know, they got the ball around to some of the other guys, and those guys, you know, were beneficiaries of that.
OG Anunoby, 26 points. Gary Trent Jr., 45 minutes, 24 points. Precious Achiuwa, we'll ignore the two missed free throws, got 20. So, tip of the cap to Van Vliet and Siakam getting the ball to them. The defense is sucking in on the stars so the other guys can put up numbers. But the thing is, again, for Siakam, 16 shots. That's not enough. 12 points, zero free throw attempts. Five shots in the second half and overtime. I said in my opening thought, the number one sports sin, it's not failure. Now, failure is not great, but shying from the moment. It's not saying that Siakam is soft or anything like that, but the guy played 48 minutes. I think he led the NBA in minutes played. It's not about that, but he shined from the moment. Socialism works in the regular season. In the playoffs, it's not about sharing the ball, spreading it around as much. When you're Siakam and Van Vliet, you got to shoot and you got to score. Neither one of them did. On a bigger picture level, the winning basket was a drawn play for Joel Embiid to shoot a three, and he's good at it. But think about that for a second. Just like that play there also tells you where we are in basketball, where the play to win a playoff game is give it to the big man and let the big man shoot a three. If you took someone, if you traveled back in time, and you took like me from 93 watching, or 94 watching the Knicks and the Houston Rockets in the NBA Finals, and I'm yelling at my TV, stop getting, why is O.J. Simpson on my screen in a white Bronco? I don't care. I want to see how John Starks does. And then I see what he did. I'm like, oh, let's go back to the Ford Bronco Chase. But you take that person in 94 and you show them that play, they would be confused. Why is a big man shooting a three? Like, the idea of a big man like that shooting a three back in the day, it's like, oh, what happened? Did the team waste 23 seconds on the shot clock? Is it a busted play? Because there's no way. And it's not even just, oh, okay, he's wide open. It's this play is designed for him. Like, producer Conrad, like, I don't know when you started watching basketball, but in the 90s and even the early to mid 2000s, that play would have seemed strange.
Oh, yeah. You hit the nail on the head there, Matt. And as far as Embiid goes, I mean, his skill set is just unstoppable. You saw it across most of the game last night, in particular the second half there. But yeah, as far as it goes, you've got a whole bunch of 7-footers shooting threes in the NBA and shooting them well at a pretty high clip. So, ton of confusion on that one if you spun the clock back 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and it just, but what a devastating final play. And, you know, it gets to the point where almost everything went right. Like, the main problem with the Raptors and their losses in game 1 and 2, they weren't generating more shots. That's how they win. They generate more shots than their opponent. And that's why they lost by 20. That's why they were down by 29 in game 2. They took 12 more shots. Harden fouls out. They win the fast break opportunities. They force 24 turnovers. Those 24 turnovers lead to 27 points. They led or were tied for the entire game. Philly didn't hold a lead in regulation. They didn't get their first lead until 3:27 left in overtime, and Toronto still loses. Like, that's the disheartening thing, where you can look at this went right, this went right, this went right, and in the end, Toronto lost. That's the toughest part of, that's really the toughest part of all of this, is that, so many things went right, but the stars didn't show up. And then it comes down to that. The stars did not show up. And as we know, by the way, NBA teams are 143-0 all time when they take a 3-0 series lead. By the way, FanDuel, you can take the Raptors to win 4 straight games at plus 3,500. It doesn't mean game 4 isn't going to be compelling. And a little bit later, I'll tell you why game 4 is still going to be compelling, why, you know, it still is of interest. But we go from basketball to hockey. Dave Poulin is going to join us on the other side. I'm curious his thoughts on Matthews not playing, and also Alexander Ovechkin waving off a penalty that could have helped the Capitals. That's coming up next right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. Tonight, it is the Leafs and Lightning, a game you can listen to right here on TSN 1050, 7:30 pregame, puck drop at 8 o'clock. Joining us now to talk all things Leafs and a little Ovechkin as well, it is Dave Poulin, NHL and TSN analyst, and does a great job writing for the Toronto Star. Dave, thanks for joining the show today.
My pleasure, Matt. How are things with you? Everything rolling good?
Yeah. It's funny. I've been starting to go back to the studio, which has been great. I'm back home today, and it's kind of rainy, but no complaints at all, Dave. Zero complaints. Well, beyond the Raptors. I wanted to start here. We'll get to the Leafs, but in all your years as a player, as an executive, or in the media, do you ever remember a time where a player declined a penalty that could have helped his team, like we saw with Ovechkin against Vegas?
I didn't even know it was an option.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite remarkable. It really was. And no, I don't, quite frankly, ever remember that happening.
Okay, yeah, so this is the first time. If you were on the bench, you know, if you were one of the Caps, wouldn't you be like, hey, Alex, what's wrong with having another power play?
Well, the expression is draw a penalty. It's not concede a penalty. So I don't know whether he's throwing it in or what, you know, what exactly the overall circumstances were, but it was bizarre, you know, for a man that's been as potent on the power play as he has been over the years.
Yeah. Very strange. So strange. And if you haven't seen that, we'll play you the sound a little bit later and go check it out on YouTube. So, Dave, Jeff O'Neill and Charles Barkley are guaranteeing a Leafs first round playoff series win. Do you want to jump on that train as well?
Prefer not to use that word in sports. I don't, I'm not a guarantee guy, because there are way too many variables involved. And I know Charles a little bit, and I know that personality, and I certainly know Jeff a lot, and I know that personality, and they're fine doing it. Certainly their prerogative. We're not even sure who they're playing yet. And, you know, there's so many different factors that go in. I'll certainly give my opinion. They're better poised to win a playoff series, I think, than they have been so far. But, you know, and I'm always asked about matchup situations. No one ever says who they want to play. But when another team has a goalie like Vasilevsky, you know, that's got to be planted in the back of your mind somewhere on how good he is and what he's capable of. But, you know, it's so interesting as it gets down this stretch here, Matt, with what the matchups may be. Because if you're in the East and you're playing any one of the other three, you know, top teams in the Atlantic Conference, I mean, pick it, you know, pick it and see what it is. And you got to go through two of them to get to where you want to go. And you know, the idea of a, I think individual players feel better playing against certain teams, but that may be a personal thing. It may be a matchup thing. It may be, you know, I've heard guys say things, Matt, like, I've always liked the lighting in this arena. You know, I've always felt good here. I've always liked the way the boards go, you know, things like that you wouldn't possibly think of. Or a guy might just say, I'm really comfortable here. I just, you know, I feel good in the locker room, and or I hate this locker room. I hate everything about this locker room. So many different factors go into what you may or may not do. But from a team standpoint, you know, it's well documented that it doesn't matter what happens during the regular season. The playoffs is a different season. Now, if you go in and you've beat the team every time you've played them, it does matter to you. And if you go in and you've lost every game, it doesn't matter because it's not in your favor to matter.
Yeah.
But I think it's more of an individual personal thing than it is, you know, for instance, when I started my career, Matt, we played the Rangers the first couple of years, and they were 9:30 starts in Madison Square Garden.
What?
Because the circus was there every year at that time of year, and the circus had a matinee. So picture a 9:30 start.
Oh, my God.
Okay. No morning skate because there was no ice available. And, you know, so you had a whole day to kill, and then you were playing at 9:30 at night. You know how guys say there's a difference from playing, you know, from 7:30 or 7.
Yeah.
Well, think about a 9:30 start in Madison Square Garden. So the fans have just had a little more time to get ramped up than they normally do coming off their work day. And it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy, the fact that it went on. And so from that standpoint, did I want to play the Rangers in the playoffs? No, but it had nothing to do with that, and the fact that I didn't want to play games at 9:30.
Oh, my God. That's absolutely nuts. Okay, so I will put you down as you will be abstaining from the guarantees, and you'll leave that up to the O'Neills and the Barclays of the world.
And you know what? You can put that down, and you can write it in ink, and you can just carry it around with you.
Sure.
Whenever you ask me to use that word.
Yeah. No, I know. Everyone, there's a couple words people are always afraid of. That's one of them. Actually, wait, going back to your answer there, Dave, did you have a stadium that or a city that for whatever reason, an odd reason maybe to the rest of us, that you just always played better at?
Yeah, you know, I love playing in the Montreal Forum. And in my, let me do my math really quick, in my playoff career, I would have been 5-1 against Montreal. And, you know, so we beat them 3 straight years in Boston. We beat them twice in Philadelphia. So do I like the building? Absolutely, I like the building. I like everything about the building. It was hard ice. It was fast ice. The energy was great. The crowd was great. So, you know, things like that factor into play. And you're like, oh, yes, you know, certain buildings you like playing in. And a large part of it had to do with ice for me. Another reason not to play in Madison Square Garden after the circus, Matt, is the ice wasn't exactly a treasure. And you were also mixing in with the Tigers and Lions because they kept all the animals right outside your locker room, right? And I mean, you were literally walking up saying hi to the elephants on the way to the game. It was really bizarre. It really was.
Yeah, that is. That's way different. I would love to see that now. Now it's always players walking in, and we try to see who's the most stylish dresser. You're trying to avoid getting mauled by an animal. I mean, I got to tell you, from a TV point of view, that one's far more compelling.
Fully entertaining. Right up in the locker room.
Dave Bullen is joining us on the line. Dave, any thoughts on Austin Matthews is not going to play tonight? Sheldon Keefe said he's really close. This feels nothing more than, you know what, let's make sure he's 100% when the playoffs start.
It does feel like that. We don't know what the injury is. And, you know, so you can't comment on, okay, well, he's going to miss, this will be the third game in a row. Is he able to do everything else from a conditioning standpoint? And so that's not going to be a factor. He's missed time before. I look back, obviously he missed the three games at the start of the year, and he came out of the gate kind of slow with 2 points in his first six games out and then tore it up. When he missed the two with his suspension, he did not miss a beat. He was scoring on the way in and he was scoring on the way out. And so that's the factor. Now, does it throw a little wrinkle into the Hart Trophy more than the Rocket Richard, because he's still got a 4-goal lead there. But does it throw a little more of a wrinkle into the Hart Trophy?
I think so.
I think it does. And, you know, it looks like, I mean, the problem with those top five scorers, Matt, is they can rack up 4 or 5 points a night and half, right? Like Leon is now 2 hat-tricks in his last 11 games. They can score in bunches. So it's probably affected that a little bit. Does that affect him at all? Or does he say, no, that's irrelevant. It doesn't matter to me at all. And you know, where is the decision coming from exactly? It's always a group decision. The doctor would be involved, the trainer would be involved, the player would be involved. But, you know, ultimately someone is saying, okay, well, let's give it another day. Well, who is that that's saying that? It's likely the head trainer in consulting with the doctor. And, you know, and I worked with those guys. The trainers in the National Hockey League are tremendous. I mean, they really are. And they always have the best interest of the player at heart. And so this is a little bit of a, you know, if this were the playoffs or they had to win a game to get in the playoffs, would he be playing? Well, they don't have to answer that question. And all they have to answer is that, you know, with a handful of games left playing in Tampa Bay tonight, he's not playing.
Does it feel like this could be a lost year for Jake Muzzin? And again, we don't know all the injuries and everything and how he's feeling. And it's always like, oh, you know, he's trying with the team, but he's not ready to play. And just, it has been such an up and down year for him, more down than up, I would say, you know, certainly compared to his normal standards. I don't know why, Dave, it kind of feels like this could just be a lost year for him.
It depends how it ends, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it really depends how it ends. And the injuries that he's had, the head injuries, you know, I mean, that they're going to be super cautious with those. They have to be. And there have been a couple of them as well. But if he comes back and is well-rested physically and mentally and plays well in the playoffs, then the regular season will certainly be forgotten. If he's not able to do that, then it becomes a really tough year.
Dave, always appreciate, and I'm not going to lie to you, for the rest of the show, I'm just going to be thinking of 9:30 starts and Lions and Tigers and Bears.
Well, you know what? I've got another circus story for you, actually.
What?
Unfortunately, I do. I have two circus stories for you today, Matt, because in 1987, in the finals, back then, you know, the Western final against Edmonton was 2-2-1-1-1, and you played every second day. Mm-hmm. And so we were down 3-1, and we won game 5 in Edmonton, came back and won game 6 at home, and went back to Edmonton and had to wait an extra day because the circus was in Edmonton. And we had to wait the extra day to play the game 7. And Lindsey Carson always said, Lions and Tigers cost us the Stanley Cup. So two circus stories out of one guy in one day, Matt.
Dave, I love it. It's fantastic. I mean, here it is, thinking we're going for hockey analysis, and in the end, we're getting circus stories. Fantastic. Always a pleasure, Dave. Love when you take time to join the show.
Okay, Matt. Thanks. Have a great day.
Yes, you as well. That is Dave Poland, NHL on TSN analyst and Toronto Star writer. All right, on the other side, David, I was mentioning about the Hart Trophy. Let's get into that for a little bit and the odds and all that's on the other side. I'm Matt Cause. You're listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. The Edmonton Oilers are 8-1-1 in their last 10, and a lot of that is they're getting good goaltending, but also, you know, Connor McDavid scored his 43rd goal, finished with 3 points as Edmonton beat Dallas 5-2 last night. Edmonton has won three in a row, and, you know, and 9-1-1 in their last 11 games. They're getting closer to second place in the Pacific. McDavid has got 13 points in 9 games in this month. He's gone over a point and a half in 5 of his last 9. He's now leading the NHL in scoring. And I bring all this up, and I don't know how you feel about this, Conrad, but Austin Matthews is around minus 300 to win the Hart. Second place is McDavid at plus 300. Now, as for what the Leafs are doing, if Matthews isn't 100%, they're doing the right thing. It's all about the playoffs. It's all about his health. And obviously, you know, Matthews is going to be on board with that. But if someone was looking to put a late bet down on the Hart Trophy, there's nothing stopping McDavid to again, become like a point and a half, 2 point, 2 points a night player between now and the end of the season. And I don't know, it feels like that the Hart Trophy had been wrapped up for a while, but I don't know why Connor McDavid can't sneak in and win it in the last moment, especially if the Oilers keep winning.
Well, I believe it's 15 less goals that he has, but 11 more points in total. So,
yeah, absolutely.
There's no reason why he couldn't win this thing. I think sometimes we get caught up in the Toronto market being where we are and it being such a hockey hotbed. You know, I think we get caught up watching what Austin Matthews has done this year, and I'm not taking anything away from him at all. The goal scoring is absolutely phenomenal, something that we haven't really seen in a while. But Connor McDavid is right there, and he could just easily win the Hart Trophy just as much as Matthews could. So that's smart money if you're throwing down on him.
I was thinking about it that it seemed like, oh, it's a done deal. You know, Matthews is going to win it. And he certainly could. And, you know, maybe he comes back and he gets the 2 goals, gets to 60, and then maybe we're not talking about it. And yeah, McDavid has got Matthews has way more goals, 15 more. But this is also a year where there's 4 guys with 50 goals or more. Kreider's got 50. Ovi just got it. Dreisaitl's at 54 right now, and Matthews obviously with 58. But McDavid leads the NHL. He's got 11 more points than McDavid. Anyway, just something to keep in mind. Hey, we cited it in the last segment, Dave Poulin. Let's hear the guarantees, and we'll first start with the O Dog. Here's Jeff O'Neill from yesterday, guaranteeing the Leafs win a first round.
I don't think they care who they play. I think they're well. They're sitting pretty right now. I know we asked the question and it was content for the show. Who are you afraid of? Who would you rather play? You got to go through them, and it's just whoever you get. And I think they have a good chance of beating anybody. I think the curse is over this year. I think they get by the first round. I don't care who they play in the first round. I think they get it done. That's my statement for today.
Whoa, wait a minute. Run that back. That sounded like a bit of a mic drop.
Yeah, it was.
No, I just think they're going to get by. I believe they're going to get by the first round this year. It's got to change sooner or later, Hazy. You got to have faith.
And then maybe to appease the Raptor fans everywhere, after a tough loss in overtime, Toronto down 3-0 to Philadelphia, here's Charles Barkley.
Hey, let me tell you something about Toronto, too. I'm guaranteeing that the Maple Leafs gonna win a series this year.
Oh my God,
the Maple Leafs are gonna win a series this year. Guaranteed.
You're in the wrong sport.
I love it. You're in the wrong sport. Yeah, we know. Thanks. Unfortunately, Barkley doesn't have a great track record when it comes to predictions. Someone texted in the show, Cause, what wine would you recommend to get this taste out of my mouth after last night's Raptors game? Leo from Mississauga. Let's stay local. Niagara. Go grab Cassava, Niagara Winery. Go get a bottle of their Syrah. Really good. And that is my recommendation in terms of what wine to get. And yes, a tough loss for the Toronto Raptors. And yeah, I mean, it just feels now that game four, it's going to be so much of it is just about, is going to be about pride. And actually, you know what? Let's hear from Fred VanVleet. Here's a Fred VanVleet talking about Saturday's game.
Well, there's no more victories right now. You know, we can sit back, you know, once it's all said and done and appreciate and have an optimistic perspective. But right now we're still in the trenches. We're still in the fight. We got to bring even more fight, in a couple of days. And, there's no room to look around and, you know, feel sorry for ourselves. So, we did a lot of good things tonight. We played, you know, a lot of minutes of great basketball, and we're going to have to do it again and bring even more fight, even more intensity, more execution. And, you know, we're playing for our pride. Our pride is on the line.
And absolutely it is. And I mean, that's why to me, the game is compelling only because of the character of these players. And Siakam and VanVleet should rightfully be criticized. I imagine however hard you're being on them, they're probably harder on themselves. VanVleet, bad night shooting. Siakam, shying away from shooting. But I'm still fascinated to see what they look like in game four. No one wants to get swept. No one wants to get swept at home. Also, there's this clip here by Precious Achiuwa. Had a good game at 20 points, shot the ball well, defended. You know, remember, Joel Embiid did nothing in that first, did very little in that first half. It's actually Harden played better than he did. But here's a Precious Achiuwa on, you know, getting these significant playoff minutes.
I mean, like I said, it's a learning experience. First time I'm actually, you know, playing significant minutes in the playoffs. So just learning, you know, moving on, just getting better. Definitely, I know I'm going to be back up, you know, a lot of times in my career. And I'm just, like I said, it's a learning experience. So I'm moving forward for me.
And when I heard that clip, my first thought was, damn, I wish Scotty Barnes was here. Partially just from the, hey, team would have a better chance of winning. In fact, Barnes plays last night. I think we're all feeling pretty comfortable that the Raptors win game three. But it's also what he said there about learning, about developing, about being exposed to that environment. That's the other side to all of this. The small picture is it stinks because the Raptors are a better team than Scottie Barnes is on the court in these specific games. But the big picture is you want the rookie to have this feeling, to feel what it looks like. That makes no sense at all. To just to play at the highest level of competition, which regular season's high, postseason is far, far higher. And that is the real bummer of, well, just one of them, of all of what we saw last night. And as for Joel Embiid, like, if you want to know, like, just what the elite looks like that. You know, and there's only so many of them. And Embiid, at worst, will finish second in the MVP race. 33 points, 13 rebounds. And he had 5 points in the first half, then 18 in the third. Also, that basket he made at the end of the game to win it, that's his first career game-tying or go-ahead field goal in the game's final second, regular season or playoffs. Before making that shot, he had been 0 for 14 on that shot that he made at that moment. Oh, all right, we'll take a break because I think all of us are just getting a little bummed out by all of that. But on the other side, we do it each and every Thursday. It is our version of F, Marry, Kill. It is Stardom, Sit'em, Cut'em. That is coming up next. I'm Matthew Cause. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Remember, you can stream us on TSN 1050.ca and with the iHeart Radio app. Time now for traffic.